This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To make himself accountable, partly because he knows it goes a long way to players when, even if it's not that bad of a job, the fact that you own up to your mistakes, it helps kind of soften any resentments. But the criticisms that the caller brought up, like, look, there might be fair criticisms about, you know, hey, his rotations and how deep of a bench should he actually have. But when it comes to adaptability, I never really heard that as a Steve Kerr criticism. I mean, the reality is he adapted his offense to pave way for Kevin Durant, where it was all ball movement before Kevin Durant went in. And then it was a mixture of that and looking for Kevin Durant in isolation. And Steve Kerr has already been on record. I know that he's told Tim Kawakami from The Athletic that there are going to be more pick and rolls because of Willie Cauley-Stein and D'Angelo Russell being with the team. So,
and let's not forget Stephen Curry's a pretty good pick and roll player as well.
Right,
I know that
right.
The flow and the openness has been a big part of it, but Curry, maybe you can maximize more run and more pick and roll.
Right. So I suspect that Steve Kerr is going to adapt to his system. And also, he is a coach that wants ideas from his assistants. So the fact that someone like Nick Yurin suggested, hey, put Andre Iguodala back in the starting lineup during the finals, or, you know, Ron Adams saying, hey, you know what, the best defense on Tony Allen is not to defend him at all. He seeks input from his assistants, and I think that's something that he invites. He asks for different opinions, and he'll consider it. He looks at analytic reports and also has a balance of looking at numbers but also knowing personalities and knowing how NBA players think because he is one. So if there are criticisms of Steve Kerr, it's not the refusal to adapt. He has shown that he adapts, but at the same time, he's also been blessed and fortunate that he's had such a great roster, and he still has a good roster, but it's not as talented as before. So that is going to prompt him to, you know, change his philosophies a little bit and also change his rotations as well.
Let's get to Robin in San Francisco. Hey, Robin, you are on 95.7 The Game with JD and Mark Medina.
Hey, good afternoon. First of all, I just got two quick comments and a question. But the first thing I want to say is, if Glenn Robinson is listening, don't ever call San Francisco San Fran. Definitely don't call it Frisco, but that's up for debate. But when I heard him say San Fran, I cringed. I was like, oh my God, if you guys are from tell him it's San Francisco.
We'll take it. We should have corrected him on the spot.
That's a fair point, Robin, and that's one that I did recognize. But again, you're always in that position of, do you really want to stop the interview right there? Probably not. But no, it's noted, Robin. Thank you.
Okay, real quick, it seems to me that everyone, there are a lot of people glad that Kevin Durant is gone from the Warriors and all of a sudden they're not a championship team. But then if they weren't a championship team, then what was the problem with Kevin Durant coming in the first place? To me, that, you know, it seems so hypocritical. And then the second thing I want to say to you, John, is I don't like Paul George either. With that combination, I'm not thrilled about AD and LeBron either. And then the last and most important thing is the Warriors organization was talking about being light years ahead, and I know he regrets saying that. And then they're looking at this, Spurs model for sustainability. But how did they get so cash-strapped if they're so light years ahead? You know what I'm saying? And how do they move forward to rebuilding, to getting back to at least a championship caliber? I hate the word super team. And so that's what I'm really interested in knowing. How did they get to where they are in terms of trying to build a sustainable model, because it seems to me that they exhausted themselves. And that's all I got, you guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, Robin. As far as getting cash-strapped, I mean, it's called – you have Stephen Curry, he becomes a max player. You have Klay Thompson, he becomes a max player. You have Draymond Green, who's not a max player yet, but he's somebody that got a significant raise over his rookie contract. And then you add D'Angelo Russell, who he himself on his own level is now a max player. So those four players adds up to about $118-119 million of what now the Warriors are allowed to spend, which is 138.9, I believe.
Right. And I mean, to the caller's question of how all of a sudden an organization that was light years ahead suddenly not be close to that, I think it was a perfect storm of you have two debilitating injuries in the NBA Finals to your two All-Stars, and then one of them was already leaving anyway, and then one of them is now expected to miss half of next season. They're cash-strapped because of the financial parameters you outlined pretty well there, JD, but they're also cash-strapped because once they did the sign-in trade with D'Angelo Russell, they were then subject to a hard cap. So it wasn't a matter of, oh, are they willing to take the luxury tax? Like, they can't be over that hard cap anymore. So all of a sudden, they had to make moves that were made because of financial considerations more than basketball decisions, i.e. the Andre Iguodala trade. And so if the reality is, and this goes back to an earlier point that you made, JD, if Klay didn't get hurt in game six, this would be much different. They would be obviously in a less beneficial position because Kevin Durant leaving, but they very well could have just run it back, bring back everyone together, re-sign some new role players and see what kind of noise they make. Now, all of a sudden, you'll lose two All-Stars for at least half of the season, and you're thinking differently. And I always thought in the last few years, you know, JD, remember when Steph Curry would go down or Draymond Green would go down or Kevin or Klay, and they always seemed to hold it together. They were fine because they had so much depth. I always felt like if one of the All-Stars is hurt, they're fine because they have so much continuity. They still have so much talent. But when you have two All-Stars going down, all of a sudden that changes the complexion differently, and that's what you're seeing for a full season now.
Well, and the margin for error is just going to be different for the Warriors. Like, if they're going to be a playoff team, and actually I want to ask you this coming back, so we'll do it. Is there a number specifically? So we'll tease it, and I'll let you think about it, and we'll come back to it. Is there a number of games in your mind that Stephen Curry and Draymond Green have to play for the Warriors to become, let's say, a playoff lock? Because to me, it all hinges on how many games those guys play. We'll get into that coming up. More of your phone calls. And also, Mark Spears is going to join us at 11:30. It's JD, Mark Medina, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina here on 95.7 The Game. It's Warriors This Week until 1 o'clock, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Chilton Autobody text line, the 415 brings up a point of clarity, which I do think we should explain. The Warriors are not cash-strapped, guys. They're salary cap-strapped.
Yeah,
big difference. They have and will have boatloads of cash, and that is accurate. They have money, but it's just a matter of how much you're allowed to spend. And right now, the Warriors, I mean, they're within, depending upon who you read among the cap experts, I mean, they're within $1 million of the hard cap. And they are a hard cap team because of the D'Angelo Russell trade. If you acquire a play, if you're a tax team, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you're a tax team that acquires a player in a sign-in trade, you become a hard cap team.
Yep,
so under
exactly.
Any circumstances, you cannot go over that hard cap, which the Warriors are very close to. And my understanding is they are, depending upon the player, they are less than a minimum player away from that cap already.
Yeah. Good distinction. The Warriors are not lacking for money. I think Forbes valued them at over $3 billion. They're going to be making even more money when Chase Center comes you know, fully completed for next season in San Francisco. So it's almost the equivalent. Their bank account's really good. But they have these credit cards that have all these strict spending limits on it. So even if they want to go on this bonanza, the credit card companies are saying no.
Let's get to PM in San Francisco. PM, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, JD, you are always electric. And Medina, you are stupendous. First of all,
nice. I'll take that. Thanks.
Yeah, first of all, I want to go back in time and just kind of remind everybody that when the Warriors lost Game 7 of the NBA Finals to LeBron James Cavaliers in the 2015-2016 season, I think the league was already adjusting to the way they play, and it definitely opened LeBron James' eyes on the blueprint and how to beat the Warriors. So if the Warriors weren't able to sign Kevin Durant in July of 2016 and they ended up re-signing Harrison Barnes, realistically, I don't think the Warriors would have won the last two championships. And to make matters worse, within the timeline, maybe, and this is a super hot take, maybe the Cavaliers were the one that would have won three in a row and three-peated, crazy as it sounds. So when Lacob Myers and Steve Kerr acquired Kevin Durant, I think the front office, having Kevin Durant for 3 years now, should have found a way to understand him as a person and found a way to connect with Durant's overall goal and the Warriors organization's goal. So I think I partly blame the front office for not keeping the best player in the world happy. I think employer retention is the lifeblood of the company, and I think this all comes down to what did our upper management and leaders do to influence Kevin Durant and keep him engaged with his overall goals in life. And that's all I got, guys. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, PM. I think there were times, though, where, and I know you wrote about this and others wrote about this. I mean, there were times where the Warriors, I think some would have thought, went too far in trying to appease Kevin Durant. At different times.
Yeah, I mean, they would always say, hey, he's the best player in the game, and they would, you know, maybe change up some of their play calls to get Kevin looks. I think the caller hit the nail on the head as far as what Kevin meant to the Warriors, and there very well could have been a scenario. They do not get him in free agency in 2016, that it is the Cavaliers that are winning all these titles. But as far as placing the blame on the front office and not appeasing him enough, look, in professional sports, even the well-intentioned players and humble athletes, there are egos. Like, they're very accomplished, and they want to bring the best out of what they can do because of their own competitiveness, their own financial stakes. The Warriors had those conversations, and I think big picture, they made all those sacrifices, or unless if they didn't, they wouldn't have won all those titles. The only part I blame is Draymond could have not said those things he said after the Clippers game. But again, and same with the Bob Myers parade thing. But again, I think even if you remove those two episodes, the outcome still would have been the same. Because at the end of the day, Kevin Durant had successful awards. He kind of got what he needed, so to speak. And I think the reasons for his departure had more to do with everything else besides the Warriors, of wanting to take on a new challenge, being in a new market that's still a big market in New York, teaming up with a friend in Kyrie Irving, and also trying to chase the legacy questions of, will it enhance his legacy to win at a high level without, you know, all the Golden State talent around him?
Another text that comes in, so back to a soft cap next summer, correct?
Yes.
You're back when the league year changes, as of now, June 30th of next year, although there is some talk that maybe they're going to change some dates around, possibly. But when the new league year starts and free agency opens next year, the Warriors will again, the hard cap goes away at that point, and they can use, like for Draymond Green, for example, if they use his bird rights to sign him to a new contract, you can go over the hard cap number at that point in time.
Yeah, and then July 6th, they'll be able to use that $17.2 million trade exception they got as part of the Iguodala deal to Memphis. They're only going to have one day to use it, JD.
Sure.
But things happen quickly in free agency, and I my hunch is that $17 million is a lot of money, so they'll be able to get either a good role player for a few years on that, or they can use that to lower the cost of getting a really good player. I remember, you know, the Lakers made this controversial move when I was covering them. They traded Lamar Odom to Dallas, and they got this trade exception. And they wound up using that as part of their acquisition to get Steve Nash. Now, that move backfired on them. Steve Nash's body broke down. But at the time, it was like, hey, Thank God they had that trade exception. It wound up helping them sign someone of that caliber.
Yeah, it gives you the wherewithal. And yeah, you'll have one day to execute it. And the timing of everything when they put that transaction through gave them the day, basically. If you put it, they wanted to give themselves some breathing room. They last for 1 year. But you can line things up, as we've seen throughout the free agency process, that things typically are lined up, even maybe when they're not supposed to technically be lined up.
Right.
As far as the timing goes. So you have one day, you have to execute it by that certain day, but you can, you've basically got a week to negotiate it officially.
Yeah, I need to check in with Warriors and salary cap people, because I'm not a salary cap expert, but there is a moratorium. And the reason why there's a moratorium, and that gives all these teams time to handle all their bookkeeping and all that. So I don't want to misstate anything on the radio, but there is, at least broadly speaking, flexibility for teams to agree on things while having time to
maneuver financially.
Maneuver financial things. But I need to, check on fine-tuning of all those exact details.
Yeah, and that period is the June 30th to July 6th period.
Right.
Basically, where nothing can officially happen because you got to make sure your finances are in order and you do everything in the right order as well. You have to renounce to allow for space, and then you have to sign a guy to space, and then you use your bird rights last, and then you do your minimums. And then, there's an order of operations to the whole thing that has to be satisfied to allow you to do it under the rules.
That's why the Warriors boost themselves, or any NBA team. They have all these salary cap experts, these mathematicians, and they aren't even necessarily part of the front office, right? Like, they're not negotiating the trades and evaluating draft prospects. The Bob Myers and Larry Harris, all these guys, they know the cap, but there's so much minutia, so much number crunching that teams have these guys that know it in and out because it's so complicated.
Let's get to a couple of calls here before Mark Spears joins us. Cody in San Mateo is up next here. Hey, Cody, you are on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, thanks, guys. Love the show. Great stuff. Felt compelled to call in. One of your previous callers basically blamed KD leaving and that whole, bad blood on the front office. I think that's pretty weak. Clearly, they've shown they're willing to do anything financially to keep the team together and to win games. And, before he got here, they built a hell of a culture. So I just think that's a terrible take. I mean, he said it himself, it was hot, but it's just a downright bad take. I wanted to know your honest opinion on that as well. So I'll take that off the air. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Cody.
Yeah, as I was mentioning, I don't think Kevin's departure really had anything to do with the Warriors. That's not to say that everything is perfect. Nothing in life is perfect, but beyond the things I had sorted out earlier in the show of, kind of the team dynamics, no one knows for sure Kevin Durant's true feelings about his injury and, to what extent did he feel misled. But factually speaking right here, when the Warriors cleared Kevin Durant to play in Game 5 of the NBA Finals after he had missed, that chunk of time with his calf injury ever since injury in Game 5 against Houston in the second round, they had consulted with the front office, the coaching staff, the training staff, Steve Kerr, Kevin Durant himself, Rich Kleiman, his business manager, outside medical doctors that Kevin Durant approved. Obviously, no one was correct when they thought, hey, there's no way he could get an Achilles injury, but they all signed off on him playing that game. And so if there's any thought of, you blame the Warriors front office for quote-unquote rushing Kevin back, it's just factually incorrect. And I felt compelled to lay that out because I had laid out all the other things but failed to mention the training staff part.
Robert in San Jose. Robert, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Robert.
Thanks for taking my call, JD. Real quick, I, too, am a January 8th baby, 1965. So
I'm nice.
Welcome to the party.
Beautiful. I love it. You got me by a few years like I got Glenn Robinson by a few years. That's good. I like it.
Yes, sir. Not to call it last caller, a call before that. Stop listening to the Max Kellermans of the world saying that the only reason the Warriors won the last two was because of KD. The reason the Warriors lost in the 73 win season is Steph Curry is hurt. And the fact that he couldn't get around Kevin Love off the dribble tells you all you need to know about where Steph Curry was at injury-wise, not to mention that Andrew Bogut was also injured. So stop listening to Max Kellerman, please. In terms of this upcoming season, I'm kind of glad that KD is gone. As I said to you before, JD, not from a basketball standpoint as a player, but just the guy is just a dark cloud, and he seems to be a dark cloud and not knowing what he wants wherever he goes. And I don't think that's going to change in Brooklyn. So I'm actually looking forward to this upcoming season. His dark mood took away from last season for me because the media focused so much on what he was going to do that I thought it took away from the team. So that's my take.
All right. Thanks, Robert. How do you reconcile that? I mean, do you think the Warriors will be reinvigorated next season?
I think they'll be reinvigorated to open training camp next season because they won't have the drama and speculation.
But how long does it last?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they might feel like, oh, this feels like a fun new challenge because there's not as much of the drama with free agency speculation. And we're considered underdogs, and we have all these new fresh faces that want to show the best versions of themselves. But the reality in professional sports is that winning cures all ills. And I'll say this. I mean, it speaks to the talent, but also their ability to get through things. That for as much as they went through things last year and there was drama with Kevin, the reality is he played really well. He was in line with his career averages. The team played really well. They got the number one seed. And all these guys care about and any team cares about is winning. It doesn't matter if guys are close or they don't get along. That's what professional sports is all about. So, you know, that might help them through training camp. But if things start getting challenging, believe me, they will feel like that is much more frustrating.
All right, joining us now, Mark Spears, ESPN's The Undefeated on 95.7 The Game. Mark, always a pleasure. How are you on this fine Saturday?
Man, I'm not at a game. I'm not at summer league. I'm home, so I'm happy.
Does this feel like the first maybe weekend where you're like, oh, man, I can catch my breath? It kind of feels like the off season.
Oh, man, you know, where you run some errands and went to the dry cleaner, went to the hardware store, and take a trip to Napa today.
Ooh, nice.
Living that best life, Spears, as always.
Well, today.
Right. Well, one day at a time. That's all we can do. Hey, we talked about this earlier in the week. And, you know, people coming out with their grades on what the Warriors have done and how they've managed the situation with Durant choosing to go to Brooklyn. You're pretty high on the way the Warriors pivoted in terms of not just the future, but you like D'Angelo Russell and Cauley Stein in particular as a fit. Why don't you lay that out for us a little bit here?
Well, I mean, I've gone to Sacramento a lot and, you know, JD, I see you in Sacramento a lot. And I just think that a lot of people don't know what Willie is. He's a pogo stick. I think he's the athletic center that the Warriors have always coveted. He's worked on his mid-range jumper. He's been able to get good at pick and rolls and diving and dunking. And he could flat out run. And so as far as I think what the Warriors have always wanted to do, he's that. He's that athlete that they've wanted since, remember the days where they almost got Dwight Howard over Andre Iguodala, you know, Dwight Howard from 6 years ago.
Sure.
Now, as far as D'Angelo Russell, I think we got to give him more respect. I mean, this dude ain't Kevin Durant, but he's still an all-star. He's still somebody that's 22 years old, I believe, early in his confidence and maturity and stardom, and I think that once Clay gets back, that's going to be a scary trio to guard. And also, keep in mind, man, the Warriors need scoring bad. you lose Clay for however long you lost him. You lose Durant. That's essentially about 50 points a game. So I don't know that him and Steph could make that up. But at least you got two guys that are capable of giving you 30-plus on any given night. And for people in NorCal, if they remember, Russell gave the Kings 44 last year. So this ain't no chopped liver dude.
Mark Spears, Mark Medina here. How are you?
Oh, man. trying to be like you, brother.
I'm trying to be like you. I was going to say, like, every day is a good day. Anytime you see Spears at a game, read one of his stories, or get a chance to talk with him on the radio. So you already made my day here, my man. I got a question here for you. I mean, knowing all the moves that were made in free agency regarding the Warriors and who's in, who's out, and just the rest of the NBA, looking ahead to next season, I mean, where would you put the Warriors among the Western Conference standings, given where they're at right now?
Well, I tweeted out a meme the other day, and, you know, Mark, this might be too old for you to remember, but of a battle royal in wrestling, where you had like 20 dudes in the ring beating each other up, throwing each other out. I really think it's anybody's guess who's where. There's a lot of factors involved that, you know, we can't figure out right now. Like, how many games is LeBron James going to play? How many games is Kawhi Leonard going to play? How many games is Paul George going to play? How many games is, you know, Anthony Davis going to play? Those are big factors on those two teams. Did Portland get better or worse? Utah is a new force that, with Mike Conley, he's going to get the best out of them. That, you know, they got Bogdanovic. Be worried about the pace. I mean, the Utah Jazz. Houston is scary offensively now. I'm really intrigued to see what Russell is going to be like in that uniform. Right now, it really is anybody's guess. And assuming that, you know, everybody's healthy, I can see the Warriors as a sixth seed right now.
Mark, what do you think of the Westbrook-Harden pairing as it stands now with Houston? I know they played together, but that was so long ago, and Durant was there, and Harden was coming off the bench. I mean, are the Rockets better today than they were Thursday?
I believe so. I actually think the Rockets were going backwards. And then the fact that it was, you know, a poorly kept secret that CP and James Harden didn't really see eye to eye. I mean, that was going to carry on to the season and hover over them anytime something went bad. So, you know, Daryl Morey, he likes to roll the dice. He's like a fantasy GM. Yeah. He's not scared. And, I mean, with all due respect to Chris, I think they got better. How those guys work, I don't know, but it's a good problem to have. And I think also James is playing alongside a superstar that he knows could be better than him. So that brings a different kind of respect. It does change you offensively. I'm sure those guys have known each other. They'll figure out a way to coexist. Now, I don't know who else gets a shot, but because those two guys like to get them up. But in D'Antoni's offense, with Eric Gordon, they're very, very scary.
Hey, Mark, your point you're making about just kind of looking ahead at the Western Conference landscape and, you know, your belief with the Warriors maybe being able to be in sixth place. Obviously, a lot of this hinges on, you know, the play that Steph Curry and Draymond Green will show, as well as your health. I mean, given where the team's at, what's your early feeling on how many games would it take for them to play and what kind of workload would be realistic to ask of them in order to get that sixth seed or even better?
Man, I think that Steph and Draymond need to get in the hyperbaric chamber every day.
Right.
Like, you know, being bubble wrapping it right now. Rest. Go to Greece. If you're a little bit overweight in the beginning of the camp, that's fine. Rest your body. Because they're going to need them. They're going to need them to play heavy minutes. They're going to need them to be healthy. And the sad thing is, even though they lost, they still played all the way into the final. That's still more wear and tear on them tires, you know. It's still a short offseason. So if I know Draymond, I think might have went to France for a minute, south of France, and got away. Hopefully he's, you know, on the beach in Cannes, getting a massage and drinking some wine and eating some lobster. You know what I mean? Like, just go away, get healthy, get your mind right. And I heard what you guys were saying before, and I think that with all due respect to the amazing that Durant was, they will go into a camp with a lot less stress. They will go into a camp with a lot less media focus. All the media, you know how we are, the national media, we're going to be in L.A. watching everything going on in L.A.
Right.
We're going to watch everything going on in Houston. You know, they're going to be attracted to Philly. Golden State's not the pretty kid anymore. You know what I mean? They're an interesting story, and they'll be on TV a lot. But the focus won't be there as strong until Clay gets back. You know, so in a lot of ways, I think they could just play and not have the stresses. It's the perfect new environment for D'Angelo and for, you know, Stein, Pauly Stein, and some of the young guys. I don't think the pressure is there. But at the same token, like, I do think that the Warriors need to smell the coffee, and you guys may disagree with me on this. Like, when they lost the last time, they didn't make no big deal about having won the Western Conference and putting that banner up. And that team, man, this past year, to me, they did something that will be remembered, right, like the We Believe team. They're going to be the We Were Hurt team.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, people will always wonder what if. There'll always be an asterisk on that final. And I think that team should be respected and cherished. And I don't know that there needs to be a big ceremony, but I do think in the new arena, they should raise that Western Conference banner. They should respect it. They should, if they haven't put the other one up, put that one up too. Because that is something to be proud of. Who knows when they'll get back. And you got to appreciate this golden era for the Warriors and what it is and the time in Oakland, because these last 5 years, to win 3 championships in 5 years, to go to the final 5 straight years, I don't think it was appreciated enough.
Well,
and perhaps maybe with the start of the new arena, they can.
And it's interesting, Mark, because I'm always curious, you know, the great teams really in any sport, how does it look when they go down? How does it look when they lose? And it had been a while since we had, you know, seen the Warriors lose. And I remember, you know, the fourth quarter after Klay Thompson gets hurt in game 6 and just kind of looking around the arena as we're all watching the game and just looking at the way that the Warriors finished that thing, even though they came up short. And I know they talked about that after the game and, you know, tipped their cap to Toronto and all of that. But the way the Warriors went out in losing was almost more impressive than the way they went out in winning a couple of championships. So I think to that point, I mean, you never, you know, some teams flame out, you know, when their run is done. Some teams are out picking fights with guys or not shaking hands with guys or not, you know, paying the proper amount of respect. The Warriors went out about as well, considering the circumstances, as any franchise could.
Yeah, they're like some team, some superpower country that lost the war and, you know, fought to the end, you know, like Avengers 3 or 2 or whatever.
Right.
You know, before Thanos showed up, you know what I mean? And so, if I'm not mistaken, I think I remember Dwayne Wade after the Warriors won their first one. And I hope I'm not making this up, but I'm getting older, so I don't know if I remember distinctly. But I could have sworn that he told Steph to appreciate this. They appreciate going to the finals. They appreciate winning the championship. Nothing is guaranteed. You know, remember at the beginning of the season, oh, who's going to beat them? There's no way they're going to lose. There's no way. There's no way. This is unfair to basketball.
Wreck the game. Ruin the league, yeah. Right? Ruin the game.
But you still got to play the game, and you just, you know, don't know what God has for you or your body. So, you know, just I do think that Warriors fans really have to smell the coffee same way Giants fans had to. You know, where Giants went from being a superpower to, oh, boy, we're in the wild card race now.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
well, a couple of really bad years will make you change that perspective real quick.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, you were talking about D'Angelo Russell and just his growth. What do you think he can accomplish next season, knowing how his career unfolded first with the L.A. Lakers and then how he parlayed that with Brooklyn and make an all-star appearance, knowing that he's going to be sharing a backcourt with Steph, trying to offset Klay Thompson's absence to open the season and being on a new team. What do you think he can accomplish next season?
Well, one, he has to, like, have nothing off the court, you know. We'll never forget the Swaggy P thing. Didn't he just get arrested at the airport a couple months ago?
Yeah.
You know, so, he has to just, it's time for him to move forward from a maturity standpoint. So, I think he has the ability to do that, but he has to do that. I'm not worried about him on the court. I know he could play. I know he could hit the three. I know he could pass somebody. Like, to me, I think he should not only average 20, but maybe even contend for leading the league in assists. He is turnover prone. That's a big concern for him. But you're in a Warriors uniform. You've gotten a lot of, chances to turn your career around. So I think now I just think he needed to mature in a lot of ways, because the guy I met with the Lakers wasn't the easiest guy to deal with. There was certainly some arrogance there. But everything I'm hearing now, he's just much more mature, excited about where he's coming to. You know, turn this new page and build on what you did last season.
Yeah, Mark, I mean, to your point of being around Sacramento a lot, what did you take away from Willie Cauley-Stein's time there, the good and the bad, and how it applies to Golden State next season?
I think he continually got better. He's a very intriguing guy. He's one of those people where looks can be deceiving. You know, with the racism and the some of the fear in this world, if somebody didn't know him, they'd probably jump across the other side of the street when you see him. When you get to meet him, you can find out this is a very interesting, brilliant guy with a lot of interest that are bigger than basketball. But I think by him taking the pay cut and wanting out, it tells me that he cares about winning. He cares about getting to a more challenging situation. He's betting on himself. I just think that this is an opportunity for him to finally get to the spotlight. You know, I remember interviewing Cousins' mother when he was in New Orleans, and she told me once that, you know, I really think my son needs a bigger spotlight than where he's been, being in Sacramento and New Orleans, and that was before he went to Golden State. And now within Golden State and with the Lakers now, he gets that. I think that's what Cauley-Stein needs. He's like, you know, with all due respect to Sacramento, and I hope it changes this season, do you hear him in the forest? You know what I mean? You don't. We will now come up with Willie Cauley-Stein has been talked about more in the last 10 days than he's ever probably been talked about in his career.
So yeah.
This will be a good move for him.
You mentioned DeMarcus Cousins. Have you seen DeMarcus? I mean, he's lost 20 pounds. He looks unbelievable.
Whatever diet he on, I need it. And he didn't respond when I mentioned it on Twitter, so I'm going to try to call him and figure that out, because I don't know what he did, But, I mean, they just finished the season yesterday, so to look like he ain't ate since the season ended, it's pretty remarkable.
And, I mean, what in your times talking to him, I mean, where has he been in terms of what the right weight and body type is for him to play at? Just over the – I know you haven't talked to him recently, but I know you've talked to him a lot.
Like, this is – to me, this is like new territory. You know, I don't know what he's going to be like. I think it's going to be good for him because – he'll be – obviously, he looks like he's in better shape. He'll be healthier. He'll have a training camp under his belt. He'll jump higher. He'll move better. It's probably great for his longevity, too. It looks like he's just eating crackers that are gluten-free. and drinking water and eating fish, and that's it. You know what I mean? I don't even, maybe a couple vegetables sauteed with oil and vinegar. You know, I don't know what he's eating, but it that's a lot of weight he lost fast. So I hope he doesn't get any smaller before the season, but I'm wishing him the best for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I was looking at, you know, just the calendar today, July 13th, and the season ended on June 13th. So we are literally a month removed. I'm thinking, damn. I mean, that, like, 20 pounds in 30 days is no joke.
No, like I said, I need that until I find out what it is, and then probably stick to my fat self.
Spears, enjoy the rest of your Saturday. We always appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, y'all. Take care now.
Right. Don't be so hard on yourself, Mark. You look great.
He's got nothing for you on that.
I think he hung up.
He's got nothing. He's got
Mark Spears, if you're still listening, you look great. Be you.
Be you. That's all you can be. That's all you can be is you. But, yeah, have you seen DeMarcus?
I did. I mean, I saw the photo. I got to give a shout-out to Chris McGee from Spectrum Sports down in L.A. He had a good interview with him. And, yeah, I saw a very much slimmed-down version of DeMarcus Cousins than when I last saw him, you know, following the Game 6 loss to Toronto.
I know weight has been an issue for DeMarcus, not in that he's ever really been heavy or fat per se, but – just in that when he's had injuries, he's put on 10 to 15, 5 to 10 that just slow him down a little bit. He's had a hard time throughout his career keeping weight off just based on some of the injuries he's had and being able to get the regular conditioning in. He's been able to put it on quickly.
Right.
And kind of, and you even saw this with the Warriors a little bit where it hurt his wind. You know, more than anything, he couldn't really run like you'd want. I mean, he looks like somebody intent on maybe trying to turn his game a little bit more into the modern center of trying to be a better shooter, being able to really run and be, you know, more athletic.
Right. And I mean, the injuries are a part of that. The fact he's a big guy is a part of it, but it's not even weight. It's, you have to measure body fat percentage, right? Like, part of being a big guy, it's good to have a lot of strength and muscle. So maybe if you're having extra pounds, it's not because of fat, it's because of muscle. But do you want a slimmed down version so you can and have less muscle so you can move at a quicker pace and keep up with all those mobile centers and forwards in today's NBA? That's the interesting puzzle that I think DeMarcus has been going through.
And Mark Spears with some glowing comments about Willie Cauley-Stein as well. And you know, we had a chance to talk to him a little bit in Las Vegas on Monday night when he met with everybody and D'Angelo Russell met with everybody as well. I think he's an interesting guy. He's a great quote. He is a well thought out, worldly, you know, he's a thinker. You know, he's thinking big picture, not just about basketball. My issue with Cauley-Stein is what a lot of people's issue with Cauley-Stein is. It's that maybe there's a little too much focus on the other stuff and just the consistency of the game, doing the right things on the court. Spears says he's fast. Well, if you're fast, you got to run hard consistently. You know, and I think, you know, Warriors fans saw some of the better games Cauley-Stein had the last couple of years because he was a bright lights guy in terms of he would ramp it up when he was playing the Warriors. He would ramp it up when he was going up against Joel Embiid. And then there would be other games where you'd wonder if he was even on the court against lesser opponents, kind of stuck in Sacramento on that Tuesday night where you're, you know, playing Charlotte.
Yeah, and I know specifically last season, I mean, I know that because of how well the Kings have been developing, they're this interesting young team, the thought of, hey, is this a NorCal rival? But the Warriors had squeaked out all these wins against the Kings last season after basically not trying for three quarters. They saw the Kings as this team of, hey, this is the dog days of the regular season. So you're seeing Willie Cauley-Stein at his best against a Warriors team at their worst, right? But as far as how he fits into the Warriors, he's a young player, and you're going to see, I think, some good things, some bad things. I think the thing that will benefit Willie Cauley-Stein is there is a better accountability system and culture that the Warriors have than the Kings do, where, you know, Steph Curry and Draymond Green have more credibility to whip him in line if he strays off
as well as Steve Kerr as a head coach. And also, you know, the front office, they're seen as much more communicative, collaborative, and they have their you-know-what together much better than the Kings have ever shown.
Yeah, and that's the one part of this that I think is going to be interesting, because I think Willie Cauley-Stein joined the Kings when the Kings were still a bleep show.
Right.
And I think the Kings believe that they're no longer that, and that they have other players that exude the new culture, and that maybe Cauley-Stein was still the last link to the old culture and became a guy that maybe didn't fit. So I think he's actually an interesting litmus test for where they are as a franchise, and, you know, almost where the Warriors are as a franchise too, being open to taking on a player like that. Like, we're going to find out with Willie Cauley-Stein whether he was right about Sacramento or Sacramento was right about him. Because I'm not sure, and I've been as critical of Sacramento and their culture as anybody, if it's truly changed and he was the odd man out, we're gonna find out the answer to that, I think, based on how this plays out.
Yeah, JD, good point. I mean, the circumstances are entirely different, apples and oranges, but it's the same idea. It's almost the same thought of when the Warriors got DeMarcus Cousins last year. I mean, he was with New Orleans previously, but he had gone with the Kings, and he had always felt that if he was in a good environment, those negative qualities that he has, it wouldn't be as detrimental, and they would be able to bring out the best in him. And there's no way around it with DeMarcus. I mean, they had the infrastructure of all this all-star talent that they could absorb him coming off injuries, him not being his best because of that, him having to supplement his game, maybe him having some occasional frustrations with playing time. But I think it cut good both ways with DeMarcus, where he helped invigorate the Warriors because he's a new piece. He upgraded the center spot from a talent standpoint, but there was also an awkwardness of him coming back off of major injuries, how willing he was to change his role. I think mostly he was able, but there was also frustrations with sitting out the end of games and just his own limitations and him not being used to being the guy. And so I think how it applies to Willie Cauley-Stein, I don't think he's under any illusions that he is the guy, but to what extent will he have those right habits and ability to be consistent compared to what he was in Sacramento?
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Mark Medina will come back here. It's Warriors This Week at 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina, hour number four of Warriors This Week as we are with you until 1 o'clock. Show just flying by this morning, 888-957-9570. On into the afternoon as well. Our thanks to Mark Spears for joining us in our last segment, and we will be joined by Gary St. Jean coming up at 12:30. A couple of text messages to get to here, Mark, from the 925. Did DeMarcus get with Draymond's health plan? And then the other one from the 530, Spears saying Willie Cauley-Stein is working on a mid-range jumper kind of worries me. He's already been working on that mid-range jumper.
Yeah.
It's already part of the game.
It would worry if he's like, hey, I'm going to be this three-point specialist, right? I think the expectation is Willie Cauley-Stein is going to play a lot of pick and roll, especially with D'Angelo Russell. So I think the idea is all about playing with energy, getting defensive stops, running the floor, and then trying to get easy baskets when he's either open on a pick and roll or he's setting up an open shot for Steph Curry or D'Angelo and Clay when he comes back.
Yeah, and the key for Willie Cauley-Stein to be effective is just consistency. And not consistency. Look, nobody's going to put up the exact same numbers every single night, but it's consistency with effort. It's consistency with attempting to do and make hustle plays. It's like we were talking about before the break. Run the floor with consistency. Defend with the same level of effort that you play offense. You know, Cauley-Stein's been somebody that, you know, one of the knocks on him, obviously consistency, but it's also more being more focused on the offensive game than the defensive game. When you look at his body type, he's somebody that should be able to be a pretty darn good defensive player as well.
Right. Basically, he needs to do everything that Kevon Looney does on a consistent basis. And if he doesn't, Steve Kerr will put Kevon Looney to do those things. But I think the challenge is that as dependable as Kevon Looney has been, there's a question of, okay, is he capable of playing even more minutes than those low 20s that he's been accustomed? So ideally, obviously, is they want to have two players that can fulfill those two different things. And it's amazing, JD, when you have those kind of players, as basic as it sounds, how much effort just makes a difference. Because when you're looking at Kevon specifically, you know, there's a lot of question marks still about his game. Like, how dependable can he become a jump shooter? I talked with him at Summer League, and he was saying, hey, like, I'm starting to work on the three ball even more because Steve Kerr has talked to me about that. I haven't been fully comfortable because he's not as developed in that area. They have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson usually to rely on that. But Steve Kerr made the point specifically with Kevon is that those things are a premium. As long as he has those qualities that they have known him for the last 2 years, he thinks that he'll have a 12-year career in the NBA as a dependable role guy. And I think that is perfectly applicable to Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, I think you're on the money with that. And I think to the bigger point about how are the Warriors going to make up for some of what they're losing in not having Kevin Durant, who's on to Brooklyn, and not having Klay Thompson, who's going to be out, I would say, at least until the middle of the season. And you can define middle a number of different ways.
Yeah, maybe December, January, February.
Maybe even, you know, I kind of, since the Warriors typically use a conservative approach, I think All-Star break to March, but nobody really knows. I mean, he has been categorized as a fast healer. You know, I wanted to ask you about that. Do we really know Klay Thompson is a fast healer? Is that something? I know he's been categorized as that, but how do you just feel in terms of being comfortable to write that if you're writing that? Because I've seen it and I go, that's interesting.
Well, I'm comfortable writing it because of his body of work so far. Up until this season, he hadn't.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.